Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright
with tonight's guest, peacemaker and founder of the Tariq Kamisa Foundation, Azim Kamisa.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Laura Escudé. I am Mark Legere, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
We start this show with so much gratitude. Gratitude, first off, to our friend Allison Goldwyn of Synchronistry, who has executive produced this segment and introduced us to our guest. Gratitude also, I remember watching a TED Talk 5 years ago on that our guest was giving, and I was in tears and I was emotional, and I thought everybody in the world needed to see this. And gratitude that he is here with us today to share his message and what the message has grown into and is still growing since that conversation and since this story began. And I would like to recommend, and I rarely do this, to everybody to watch that talk, wherever you could find it. We're going to give a link later on for our guest, and you can find it there. We have it on our webpage for our guest. It's there. And it starts with these words. Our guest says, "We humans have many defining moments in our lives. Sometimes these moments are joyous, and sometimes they are heartbreaking, tragic. But at these defining moments, if you are able to make the right choice, we literally manifest a miracle in us and others." And what this man has done with the choices he has made, with the story he will share with us, if you're not familiar with it, you will see the miracles that have manifested and continue to manifest. And I'll say one other thing. The talk ends with this, and our talk today will most likely end with this too, and I trust that it will be even more meaningful, even more understandable when we get there today, that there is a formula. And this formula includes goodwill, friendship, trust, empathy, compassion, and peace. And we will come back to that. So our guest has done so much in before the story that he is going to tell us even began. He is now and since been an international speaker. He is an author. He is a peacemaker. And he's founder of the Tariq Kamisa Foundation. And I just learned that he has also started a new foundation, which we will talk about as well during the show. We welcome Azim Kamisa to the Life Changes Show. Welcome, Azim.
Thank you, Filippo. Nice. Thank you for having me.
Share, please, as much of the story that sets the tone for this conversation today.
Yes, as you pointed out, my life started with a very tragic event, which was a defining moment in my life. It happened 3 decades ago. My son was an inspiring San Diego State University student, gifted writer and a talented photographer, studying journalism and hoped someday to work for National Geographic, and worked as a pizza delivery man on Fridays and Saturdays to make some extra money while he was in university. And he was lured to a bogus address in a middle-class area in San Diego, where I live as well, and by a youth gang, and in a gang initiation, a 14-year-old shot and killed him. And my son died a couple of minutes later, drowning in his own blood at the age of 20. So needless to say, it brought my life to a crashing halt. I'm sure you'll acknowledge there's nothing more complex for a parent than to lose a child. And I went through all the emotions you would anticipate a parent to go through, including at one point I was suicidal. I really did not know how to go on with my life without my only son. But sometimes in deep tragedy, there is a spark of clarity. Every saint has suffered the dark night of the soul. And needless to say, that was the darkest night of my soul, because it never really leaves you, even though this tragedy happens 30 years ago. There's never a day I don't think of Tariq several times a day. And I practice as a Sufi Muslim. Sufis are the metaphysical interpretation of Islam. And I meditate 2 hours a day. I used to meditate an hour a day when Tariq was alive. And that spark of clarity that I received in my tragedy was a download that there are victims at both ends of the gun. I really didn't quite get the relevance of that, because it was pretty immediate. When I got the news, I was in my kitchen. I lost strength in both my legs as I collapsed to the floor, hit my head against the refrigerator. And I left my body, because sometimes when you are in deep trauma, you can't be in your body. And I believe in God, and I believe I went into a loving embrace with God. I'm not sure how long I was gone for. And when the explosion subsided, I came back to my body with the wisdom that there are victims at both ends of the gun. So that download didn't come from my intellect or my loving heart. Rather, it was a download from a higher power. I did not know much about the youth gangs. I worked in international finance. I grew up in Kenya. My roots are Eastern, educated in England in mathematics and finance, and actually left Kenya because we were a minority and targeted, thinking my children would be safer. I have a daughter. He was my only son, would be safer in America. So it was very ironic that Tariq was shot and killed in a city and a country that I had picked for him. I remember my knee-jerk reaction was to leave and move maybe to England, which is a lot less violent than we are in the United States. But I recognized that my love for this country was stronger than my rage. And I also recognized that wherever I lived, I still had to deal with the loss of my only son. This is not something you can sweep under the rug. So anyway, in the next 9 months, I learned a lot about gang violence. We unfortunately in America lose a young soul like my son every hour. We've had 400 school shootings. We are the richest nation in the world. And The Economist did a study that took 25 first world countries like us and added all the kids that die as a result of gun violence in those 25 countries, took the total and multiplied that by 11. That is how many we lose in the U.S. of A. I'm not knocking the United States. We have a lot of good opportunities here. We are a free market, democratic, meritocratic society. When it comes to violence, we are a very poor example. And being this only superpower and the richest nation in the world, we have a tremendous impact on the global culture, because what happens here eventually happens in the world. If you travel internationally, what do you see? Starbucks, KFC, McDonald's, you know, SUVs, American music, American movies. And unfortunately, we are also exporting our violence. Well, the world isn't as violent as we are here, but you're seeing more and more examples of similar violence occurring outside of the United States. So 9 months after having learned all of these horrific statistics, and to honor my son, I decided to start the Tariq Khamisa Foundation with the initial mandate of stopping kids from killing kids by breaking the cycle of youth violence, and had essentially three mandates. Our first and foremost mandate was to save lives of children. Important to do. We don't need to lose as many young souls as we do in our country. Our second mandate was to empower them with the right choices so they don't fall to the crack and get involved with crime and gangs and drugs and alcohol and weapons. And our third mandate was to teach the principles of nonviolence, of accountability, of empathy, of compassion, of forgiveness, of peace building. And I started with a very simple premise, Filippo, that violence is a learned behavior. No child is born violent. If you accept that as a truism, then nonviolence can also be a learned behavior. But you have to teach it, because kids are not going to learn this through osmosis. And it shocked me, and maybe it'll shock you and your audience, that by the time our young souls get to grade one, they're 6 years old, they've seen over 100,000 images of violence.
Through TV and movies?
Movies, video games.
Wow.
It kind of broke my heart. And soon after I started the foundation, I reached out to the grandfather and guardian of my son's killer with the attitude, I'm not here screaming retribution or revenge because your grandson killed my son. I'm here because I see that we both lost a son. Tony, who took Tariq's life, lived with his grandfather and calls him daddy. And I know, meeting you, that you are also dealing with the pain that I am. And I'm really here in the spirit of compassion and forgiveness. And I've started this foundation with a lofty mission of stopping children from killing children. And the real reason I am here is to ask for your help. Will you help me? And he was very quick to take my hand of forgiveness. He's African American, he's Christian. Although I was kidding, I was telling him, I'm the African American, I was born in Africa, you are not. And we've been together 30 years. The foundation is also in its 30th year, and he's as close to me as my own brother. The foundation has reached 2 million people. Race of universe, we are definitely stopping the schools that we are present in. And not only are we stopping, we cut expulsions and suspensions by 70%, because if you expel a kid and suspend a kid, guess where he ends up in? You know, there's a big movement right now that is being tried to be reversed. It's called the school to prison pipeline. I am gratified that the foundation is successful. We have a safe school model, 4 programs for youth. We were invited by UC Berkeley to do a program for parents based on the work we've done with the kids. And during COVID, we created a program for teachers. And our safe school model now is being exported in other parts of the country. We have a second site in Pennsylvania. And we provide direct services in San Diego County. And when we leave San Diego County, we become a training institute. And someday I hope that we are funded by the Department of Education, so every school that needs us gets our safe school model. It's been tested by all the major universities and community college in San Diego. And I'm gratified to say that it is also increasing SAT scores.
Wow.
And it's been quite a journey. Then 5 years later, I decided that I had to complete my journey of forgiveness and meet the young man who took my son's life.
Wow.
He was 19 years old. And that was a very cathartic moment for both of us. I asked the grandfather to go with me the first time, but I told him I need some alone time with Tony. I have some tough questions of him because he was the last person to see my son. And if you are there, he'll be defensive. I need to talk to him one-on-one. And he was very gracious. We started to spend the first half an hour talking about Tony's life in prison. Then he left us alone, and I spoke to Tony for a couple of hours. And the seminal moment of that meeting, of course, he answered my questions, was we locked eyeballs. And we held that glance for what seemed like an uncomfortable time. I was looking in his eyes to find a murderer, and I didn't. I was able to climb through his eyes and touch his humanity. That I got the spark in him was no different than the spark in you or your audience or me. I wasn't expecting that.
Mm.
He was polite. He was remorseful. He was articulate, he was well-mannered. He did not portray any of the attitudes of a 19-year-old gangbanger in our society. I wasn't expecting that. I could now tell that my hand of forgiveness, of course he knew, because I'd reached out to his grandfather several years before I met him, that I'd forgiven him. And I could see that my forgiveness had shifted this young man. And what I'm trying to say, he was a likable kid. So at that point, I told him, Tony, you know I have forgiven you. But let me tell you that when you come out of prison, you can come and work at the Tariq Kamisa Foundation with your grandfather and me. And after a few hours, I left the prison. I still remember, he's 43 now, so that was 24 years ago. And I still remember that as I left the prison, my cadence was much more bouncier than the one I walked in.
Mm.
And forgiveness can be very freeing. It was like a big albatross that was lifted up from my shoulders. And the preeminent thought in my mind was, why did I wait 5 years?
Wow.
And the next day, the grandfather called me and said, Azim, that meeting you had with Tony has totally changed him. Prior to your meeting him, he would tell me, Daddy, I'm not going to make it in prison. I'm going to die in prison. He was the first 14-year-old in the state of California to be tried as an adult.
Wow.
And as a young, charismatic, good-looking kid in an adult prison, he was a target. And prisons are very violent, heavily segregated, and deaths happen there on a regular basis. But he says, after you met him and gave him some hope, as you were leaving, Tony looked at me and said, Daddy, that's a special man. I've killed his one and only son. Not only has he forgiven me, he's offered me a job. I'm not worthy of his forgiveness, and I'm not worthy of his job offer, but I'm going to try. And he did. At 22, he aced his GED at 94th percentile. Self-taught himself. There's not many resources in our prisons. I stayed with him from the age of 19 to the age of 39 for 20 years, advocating for his release. Finally, he went in front of the parole board, and I was there advocating for his release. And the commissioner said to Mr. Kamisa, he was in tears, he says, Mr. Kamisa, I've been doing this work for 25 years. I've never had the victim's father advocate for the offender's release. I said, he's got work to do, not behind bars. He's got to work to do with the Tariq Kamisa Foundation. I said, you can see he's not the same person he was when he took my son's life when he was 14. Release him, because I will guarantee his behavior. He can come work at the Tariq Kamisa Foundation and he can save a lot of lives. And you know what? He actually won parole, which never happens the first time you go in front of the parole board. So he came out in 2019, which was 5 years ago, and he volunteers for the foundation as I and his grandfather have volunteered for the last 30 years. We are often in front of students. We reach tens of thousands of students every year. And I share my story. And he tells the kids, when I was 11, I joined a gang. When I was 14, I killed Mr. Kamisa's son. I spent the last umpteen years in prison. I wish I could turn the clock back. That the one thing I want you to take from me is hopefully you don't make the same mistakes I did. So, as you can tell, it's an amazing story. And I'm amazed and proud of what Tony has accomplished. If you met him, you would not know he spent 25 years in prison. And he's a lot better at technology than I am. So we meet each other all the time when I was asking, can you fix my iPhone, do this? So he and I have a... he has a father, but his father was not in his life. So I took the fatherly role. His grandfather has always supported him. And my daughter runs the foundation of her brother, and they have a sibling relationship. So,
wow.
It's an amazing, he's part of my family as his grandfather is. And as committed to work of the foundation we're doing.
So forgiveness is at the root of this. And we talk about it in so many ways, but if you could encapsulate a way that very few people get to and understand it.
Yes, forgiveness is not very well understood. You're right. Because there is this feeling that by forgiving Tony, I'm condoning what he did. Mm. It's not about Tony, it's more about me. If I stay in anger, resentment, and hatred, who am I hurting? Nelson Mandela didn't write this quote, but he made it famous. He said, unforgiveness is like drinking poison and waiting for your enemy to die. Mm-hmm. So the biggest, and I've been very lucky, given over 700 keynotes around the world. I've given over 1,000 presentations to over 1 million kids, met a lot of luminaries, including His Holiness the Dalai Lama. I met him half a dozen times, and he often says the biggest impediment to forgiveness is judgment. And as you know, we are a very divided country right now, and we are very quick to judge based on race, or based on religion, based on socioeconomic, or based on however we see right now half the country is one way, half the country is another way, and the basic attitude is, if you are not with me, you are against me. Mm. And that is not what our founders had in mind. So when I wrote the book, was From Murder to Forgiveness, and my second book was Forgiveness to Fulfillment, because the work I have done has been very fulfilling, and my third trilogy was Fulfillment to Peace, and Tony actually wrote the foreword to it. But when I wrote my first book, there wasn't much on forgiveness. You almost had to go back to the scriptures. Forgive them, Father, they do not know what they are doing, as they are crucifying Lord Jesus Christ. It's a huge example of forgiveness in the Christian faith. But today, there are over 1,000 clinical studies. There's a forgiveness project in London run by a good friend of mine, Marina Cantacuzino. There's one in Hawaii run by a good friend of mine, Roger Epstein. There's a forgiveness project at Stanford University, which is in its 25th year, run by my good friend Fred Luskin. 1,000 clinical studies that say that forgiveness, A, improves your health, B, it enhances your relationships. We all want loving relationships. It puts you in the present and not in the past, and it promotes happiness and peace. And I feel if enough people knew these benefits of forgiveness, they would be running towards forgiveness. And that started, that helped me start my newest venture on March 6th of this year, which would have been my son's 50th birthday. He died at 20. That was 30 years ago. And I started a new foundation called Peace Through Forgiveness. And I've been studying it before I launched it for 3 years with 6 interns and 30 graduate students. And there are 250 organizations in the world that are working to world peace, including United Nations. And what we found out, the non-violence movements are twice as likely to succeed than violent movements. And the science tells us that when you, the tipping point is 3.5%. It's called a 3.5% rule. You can actually Google that rule. When you study Gandhi, MLK, Nelson Mandela, and more recently Black Lives Matter, once you get to the tipping point of 3.5%, it forces and changes public policy, because BLM basically spawned DEI, which is diversity, equity, and inclusive, which is what we are seeing in most everything in the country. When you look at ads, you see all different races that make up our beautiful country, and most corporations are now honoring diversity, equity, and inclusion. So the thought I had is, if you could get forgiveness to be mainstream, and if you can get to 3.5% of the world population that espouses, promotes, and role models forgiveness, that the default outcome would be world peace. So I was quite excited about that. So on March 6th, I launched it. We've had already 3 events. I'm doing the 4th one this Thursday, because Friday, which is the 27th, is the International Day of Forgiveness. And in my 3rd event, I invited 14 international organizations that are in this space of conflict resolution, of forgiveness, of peace building, of restorative justice, of nonviolence. And they all showed up. I had no pushbacks. So I'm very excited as we build that we need to come together. And the Peace Through Forgiveness already has 14 partners. And next year, which we have more time, my goal is to, you know, enroll as many of these 250 organizations as I can possibly can, and do an international event to kind of mainstream forgiveness, much in the spirit of what Lionel Richie did with We Are the World. So it's exciting. And
very exciting.
Hopefully your audiences can support us by becoming ambassadors and mainstreaming forgiveness, first and foremost in their own lives, because it will enhance their health and it will improve their relationships. It will keep them in the present, keep them more happy and more peaceful. And I know it works. It has worked for me. And our goal now is to see how we create forgiveness. I mean, we've done well with kids. I mean, most of the kids that are graduate of our programs have thrived. You know, I just spoke at San Diego State University, and this kid came up to me and said, "Mr. Kamisa, I just graduated in a degree in finance, and you were the reason." And I said, "Well, tell me more." He said, "Well, I was in seventh grade. You came and spoke to my school. And I wouldn't be at San Diego State. You came to speak at my school, and I decided to make you my role model, and not follow my older brother, my father, and my grandfather, who were all gang involved.
Wow.
His kids will not be gang involved. I can tell you stories after stories like that.
Wow.
That forgiveness is not only something that these kids have espoused, it has helped them thrive. So I'm hopeful, because I think we all want world peace, and 3.5% of the world's population is 300 million. 3.5% of the U.S. population is 10.5 million. With the advent of the internet, both of those numbers are definitely achievable. So that's, you know, I've been in this space for 30 years, and I will continue to work in this space because I paid a very heavy price.
Mm. Speaking of this space, before we get into the formula as we bring our time together to a close, speaking of this space of the adopted country of yours that you became a citizen, I noticed in the TED Talk you said, we are all responsible for the society we have created, and you came to that even with all of the hurt and anger that you must have been going through. And then I noticed that in this conversation you said that our founders, that's not the intention that they had for our country. So tell us about our country from your
perspective. Yes, I mean, it's easy to see that Tariq was a victim of Tony. I think it takes a bigger heart to see that Tony was a victim of society, of American society. Well, who is American society? Well, it's you and me and all of us who are Americans. I'm a first generation American, but I'm an American. And the question we must ask is, how did we create a society where children kill children? Mm-hmm. What is my responsibility and every American's responsibility? Because that is not mark of a civil society. We like to think we are a civil society, but children killing children is not a mark of a civil society. And, you know, I do work in prisons. And this might surprise you and your audience, Philip. I've yet to meet an offender that was not a victim. Hurt people. Tony had a very tough childhood, very abusive childhood. So, you know, you can't just point fingers at the offenders. You have to look at the victimization that goes on in our society. So I felt, you know, as an American citizen, I must take my share of the bullet that took my son's life. Mm. Why? Because it was fired by an American child. And so should every caring American. So that was my view, that we are society and we need to come together to change it. And it can be done, because this is a very much an American phenomenon. It doesn't happen in other first world countries, and it doesn't have to happen here.
We won't have a chance to speak about your latest book, Leadership for the Greater Good, A Guide for Truth to Power Champions. I get the feeling that so much of what you talked about, actually, I've been able to peruse the book, and your philosophy, your religion, your understanding of other religions, there's so much in here, and faith and hope and peace and forgiveness, it's in there, and so much more. And in closing, though, the formula that you have come up with, which sounds like something we need now more than ever.
Yes, so my formula is sustained goodwill creates friendship. Now, that ought to be obvious. You don't make friends by bombing them. So sustained goodwill creates friendship. Sustained friendship creates trust. Sustained trust creates empathy. Sustained empathy creates compassion, which makes forgiveness possible, which leads to peace. And I know it works, because I am at peace. So the formula, Goodwill, friendship, trust, empathy, compassion, forgiveness leads to peace. And hopefully the takeaway for your audiences for this particular segment is to always be in goodwill. Start there.
This is not just for people who lose people. This is for neighbors. This is for towns. This is for states and countries, right?
Absolutely. As I always say, it can work. It worked for me. What is a miracle? It worked for Tony. It worked for my family. It worked for his family. It can work for you, Filippo, and your family and your audience and their family. Indeed, it can work, you know, for Palestine and Israel. It can work for North and South Korea. It can work for Iraq, Iran, Syria, and Lebanon. It can work for Ukraine and Russia. It can work for the U.S. of A. So I believe peace is possible. And I know this because I am at peace. And if everybody can get the power of forgiveness, because you know, Desmond Tutu, I won an award with him. He's written a book called Without Forgiveness, We Don't Have a Future. Right now, we're talking about a potential civil war as we come to elections. We're talking about a potential third world war. I mean, war should be obsolete. And the only way to heal the pain, because every war has created another war. And every war that has created another war, if we could have got to forgiveness, we could have avoided it. And I just couldn't sit back and do nothing because I didn't, you know, we don't want civil war. We don't want to be out there killing our brothers and sisters. We don't want World War III. There's a great story by a school teacher, an Italian school teacher called Chiara Lubich. When the bombs were falling in World War II, she had this vision that God is love and started the Focolare movement. The Focolare movement, I was hosted by Pope John Paul in 2004. He died in 2005. And the people that look after the Pope and looked after me and the people that were at that, it was only 30 of us invited in a five-day conference. That Focolare movement today is in 180 countries. And she started that when the bombs were dropping in World War II. And I thought, you know what? I want to start this before the bombs start dropping again. Can we get enough people to get behind this? Because in our founders, and you mentioned this earlier, Filippo, this was not their vision. Democracy is exactly about disagreeing with the opposite side to find the right solutions, to debate. Well, that we've lost that. You know, it's become very much either you are with me or you are against me. And that's not what America is about. I mean, we are probably the most diverse country in the world. And what we've accomplished in a short 250 years is beyond imagination. And we need to continue to be this way and a good example for the rest of the world.
And what you've accomplished is miraculous. And so Tariq Khamisa Foundation, you could learn more about it on the website I'm going to give you now in a moment. And then directly you can go to peacethroughforgiveness.org, and that's T-R-T-H-R-U, peacethroughforgiveness.org, for the latest organization for peace, bringing other organizations together to work together in peace. So you could find many links and videos at the Life Changes show page for Azim, A-Z-I-M. Otherwise, you can go to Flow Code, if you're familiar with that, which has all his information there, flowcode.com/page/Azim, A-Z-I-M. Azim, this was a hard interview. I cried a lot. I'm glad we weren't on camera. I don't know how you've done it. I'm glad that you have, and thank you so much for being here with us and sharing as you have.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Azim Khamisa. Thank you so much. I'm going to spell that last name for everybody. Khamisa. Honored to have had you on, Azim. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Richard, and I am having nightmares almost every night. The dreams are about so many of the mistakes I've made in the past, and I want to know how to sleep without reliving these mistakes. Please tell me how to stop these nightmares.
Dear Richard, one of the first steps in changing our dreams is to take a few moments before going to bed to thank your higher self for happy and insightful dreams. You might also want to take some time to forgive yourself for past mistakes. Forgiveness is so important, and it's really important for us to learn how to forgive ourselves. So I highly recommend using the Ho'oponopono mantra. I am so sorry. Please forgive me. I love you, and I thank you. This mantra freed me from despair over my past less than elegant choices. I believe that we write our life stories before we get here, and that we write in some mistakes so that we can better understand others' choices. If we choose perfection instead of having a very human experience, I believe it would be impossible to live a happy life with the human beings we are in contact with. Having made some very interesting choices in my past has truly helped me others by understanding that it is impossible to be perfect. I'm grateful for the Ho'oponopono mantra and use it this way. Dear Dorothy, I'm so sorry for forgetting that I wrote this interesting life story. Please forgive me for being angry with some of my past choices. I love you very much, and I thank you for surviving the story and for choosing to make the most elegant choices possible each and every day. Richard, I believe that once you remember that you are responsible for your choices, and when you forgive yourself for your less than elegant ones, and when you thank your higher self for happy and insightful dreams, that you will look forward to bedtime. I'm sending you much love and support, and look forward to hearing of your progress as you choose happier dreams.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And we'll be right back with our performance guests here on the Life Changes Show, Laura S. Goudet, right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to dorothydonahue.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show, broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We are back, and our performance guest is an artist. She's an innovator. She's an entrepreneur, a live show designer, and so much more. We welcome Laura Escudé to the Life Changes Show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh, Laura, it's such a pleasure. And wow, at coming on the heels of this great interview, interestingly enough, he meditates 2 hours a day and has done that for years. And meditation fits into your music and experience, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've been meditating probably about 20 years now, and it's just been such a game changer for me and my productivity and my wellness and my music and creativity and my relationships and everything. Although I don't meditate for 2 hours a day. That was amazing to hear that. I was like, wow, that's aspirational for sure.
He incredible. Started with one.
Yeah, right.
And speaking of started with, I knowing what you do now and where you do it and how you do it and how big you do it, I had to ask you when we got a chance to chat is, where did it start?
So it all started when I was 5 years old. I saw a girl play violin at church, and I just told my parents, that's what I want to do. And they said, well, what about the piano? We have a piano. We know how to play that. And, you know, what about the guitar? No. I want to play the violin.
Wow. So
they, you know, supported me and signed me up for violin lessons. And yeah, just fell in love with the instrument.
So obviously you started classical music, right?
I did. Yes.
And when was it that you said, oh, I could do something else with this too?
Probably when I was in high school, I started listening to a lot of Dave Matthews Band, and Dave Matthews has this amazing violinist, Boyd Tinsley. And I was very inspired because I'd never heard a violin in a rock band like that before. So I started kind of thinking a little outside the box, but I still hadn't really been exposed to anything, any music that was alternative, anything that wasn't on the radio. I was just kind of listening to classical music and then stuff on the radio. When I got to college, my sophomore year, my best friend's boyfriend was a DJ, and they invited me to go to these electronic music parties, these raves. And I first said, no, that doesn't sound like fun. And finally they wore me down and I decided to check it out. And I was like, wow, I really love this style of music. I didn't really know anything about it. So then I started playing violin with a DJ. And then from there, asked the DJ, hey, how can I record myself? And so, you know, started going down the path of learning how to produce my own music from there.
Until you told the DJ, I don't need you anymore, I'll do this myself.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Actually, someone, I asked someone, another producer, how I could learn to produce. And he said, well, the learning curve is too high. You're never going to get it. Yeah. And so I said, are you sure about that?
Stick to the violin.
And, you know, that kind of lit a fire under me. So I like, I'll show you.
Boy.
But I showed myself in the process. So I
and a lot of people have gotten to benefit. I know you were the one that created this whole thing with the violin and the so you know, you and I know, right?
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely.
Well, let's get a taste for what. Actually, we're gonna go straight into the more meditative thing, right?
Yes, yes.
So, do you want to say anything about what we're gonna hear?
Yes, this is a track that I just released like a month or so ago called Chrysalis, and it's a meditation track. It's about rebirth and new beginnings, and I've just really enjoyed making this style of music. I've made a lot of different kinds of music over the years, and as you'll hear with my other track, it's completely different. But they're all for journeying in different ways, and so Chrysalis is for a meditative journey, introspection. You can listen to it while journaling or meditating.
And actually, I have to say, it definitely takes you in. Now, we had to cut in, so we're just going to go straight to when you start going at a little bit more so that we can get everything in today. But you'll still go there. Go with us to Laura Escudé's Chrysalis piece here on the Life Changes Show. Laura Escudé, and that was Chrysalis. Escudé is Escudé. LauraEscudé.com is where you could find a lot of things, but she's all over the socials as Laura Escudé. I think you're the only artist that I've seen have all their socials with the same name. Good on you.
Oh,
Right.
Amazing.
One of the
Doing
few.
something right.
Speaking of one of the only artists, future classical music artistry, tech, and consciousness. What a combo. What's the inspiration there?
Really just experiences in my life and following different pathways of things that, have called to me and have felt resonant in my journey. Yeah, I mean, music I've been in love with since a young age, as we talked about, and technology came after that, but I started learning how to use technology to capture and create my ideas. And it was this just way that I could express myself and then actually let other people hear it. Because before that, I was just creative and playing for myself or performing for people, but not able to actually capture these creative ideas. And once I learned how I could layer sounds and create an orchestra just out of myself, or add beats and electronic stuff, it just expanded so much of me and my creativity. And then a big part of my life is also human connection, connecting with people. I perform a lot in different spaces, consciousness, spirituality, tantra. And in all these spaces, I bring this element of music to people where they can move and feel and connect with one another. And that's what's so exciting to me about music, is just to be able to bring people together, to be able to pique something in them where they feel like they are have their just full permission slip to be in their highest self-expression. And so it's really in these realms that really that's why I create music, is the intersection of all these things.
Maybe you didn't create the genre, but many have said that you're the best in the world at this job. And I love what you said. I was talking about some of the things that you've done that everybody would know, all the artists you've worked with, pretty much. And of course, the Grammys, and yeah, I mean, yada, 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 and these big venues and all that. And I said, of all the things that you've done, what's like the thing that stands out or that you love the most? And that's what you said, the connecting with people and having the people connect.
Absolutely. I mean, I prefer playing in more intimate settings. I mean, of course, who doesn't want to play to, large crowds and large audiences? But I love the settings where I can just really connect visually and see everyone and serenade people with my violin and just go up and have a moment with them, or at least look at them from on stage and connect. And it's really beautiful, those people that are brave enough to connect back with me with the eye gaze or with the smile. And it can be pretty vulnerable to create music and to put it out there, and it's just so wonderful to be able to experience that receiving back of energy from people in the audience when I'm performing.
As if you are starting the conversation and in a way that we're not on a record, you're not listening to a CD, you're not listening to an MP3, right? I'm right here.
Right.
We're in the conversation. And I don't know that, maybe in rock bands where we, jump up and down, or like you said, the raves where you're kind of moving your body to all, but when somebody's that intimate performing in that way to you, I could see where it could be like, oh, we haven't really been here a lot lately.
Absolutely. Yeah, and oftentimes when I'm performing, it's improvisational as well, and I'm feeling the energy of the room and what's transpiring and what's happening and the energy of the people and what I'm feeling from that, and then I just take that and create on the spot. With that. So, it is just like a reciprocal energy vortex, I would say, space.
Nice. Nice. Well, this piece we're going to hear now is actually, it was pre-recorded, but it was a live event, right? Fierce Love?
Yes.
So is it that kind of experience that you were describing, or was this in a bigger event?
This was a smaller event. I actually performed in Montenegro last week at a festival there. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's right. That's why we were right. Okay.
So I was performing there, and I got to perform in these small, intimate spaces with people dancing and moving and just being able to really express themselves. And it was awesome to be able to play this piece because it's a newer piece, and it's a part of like a longer journey with my music that I'm experimenting with these different ways of self-expression, from the meditation to the wild, deep, bold self-expression. This is what has come of my wilder, deeper, bolder self-expression.
Nice. Well, we're going to be jumping into not quite the middle, but you'll feel it because you'll feel it. But just know that there's more to this. So you're going to want to hear the whole piece at some point. So you'll have to follow Laura Escudé and find out how you could get to hear more of her music. In the meantime, here is this pre-recorded live version of Laura Escudé's Fierce Love on the Life Changes Show.
Thank you.
Fierce Love, Laura Escudé. So again, Laura Escudé, and Escudé is Escudé. And there's an accent on the E, but LauraEscudé.com and on all the socials, Laura Escudé. Laura, actually, I just have to ask you, there are a lot of different influences. I was thinking about this as I was listening to your music earlier today. So many different influences that you bring to the music.
Oh, yes. I listen to all kinds of music. So it all seeps in there and into my consciousness. And when I'm creating, I'm just creating really from the heart and creating what wants to come through, and also being inspired by these amazing musicians and artists that are out there.
Well, I know you're inspiring other people, and actually that's one of the biggest compliments I know that you like getting, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I love to help inspire people to create, especially women, just to be in their deepest self-expression while creating through music.
Even if it's just to dance for themselves in their room,
dancing,
right?
Like no one's watching.
Well, thank you so much. I know you're on a different time zone now that you reminded me and all of that. Thank you for being with us.
No problem. Yeah.
This is such a pleasure to have you on. So all the best to you, and can't wait to connect more.
Likewise.
All right, so with a big thank you to Laura Escudé, and then another big thank you to our guest, Azeem Kamisa. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeur, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, as ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.